You're listening to the Humans of DevOps podcast, a podcast focused on advancing the humans of DevOps through skills, knowledge, ideas, and learning, or the SKIL framework.
I wonder if others feel the same way, but I just know that I miss the experience of being able to sit next to someone, not necessarily pair programming with one keyboard and one monitor, but be engaged really in solving a problem together.
Hey everyone, it's Jason Baum, Director of Member Experience at DevOps Institute, and this is the Humans of DevOps podcast. Welcome back. Hope you had a great week. I am very excited for today's episode. I know I say that every week, and it's true. I'm excited for every episode, believe it or not. I'm a very excitable person, but today's episode, I'm like extra excited for. It's completely outside of what I would say my reality, what I've had in the past, my regular reality. This week, we're going to step into virtual reality, the metaverse, and we're not, no one's sponsoring this, so sorry, Zuck, you don't get any credit for this. But with me today, my guest, I'm going to talk about who my guest is shortly, but let me paint you a picture. The image of the developer is sitting alone at his or her desk, headphones on, coding at all hours of the night. But the reality is that there's significant collaboration in software development, which involves multiple software programmers and architects writing and editing diagrams and code together on a whiteboard. And this type of work just doesn't lend itself to shared Google Docs or Zoom video of a whiteboard. This virtual barrier to collaboration can result in wasted time, ineffective frameworks for software code, and poor execution. So faced with this problem, our guest today, Jonathan Schneider, who's the co-founder and CEO of Modern, viewed virtual reality as a potential way to overcome these issues of the remote workforce in software development. How did he do it? Using inexpensive headsets and new VR software, the Modern team is now conducting daily 30-minute stand-up meetings in VR, which leads to hours of code creation involving the best ideas and approaches of the team. The quality of the code has already improved. Jonathan has a number of new ideas for further improving. And guess what? He's here to tell us some of his ideas on today's episode. So this is going to be, turn up the volume, because you're going to want to hear this. Trust me. Jonathan was nice enough to send me a headset, and I got to jump in the virtual reality. We're going to talk about that. But first, let me tell you about Jonathan. So prior to co-founding Modern, Jonathan led the engineering effort around large-scale automated code refactoring at Netflix, where he founded the open-source Open Rewrite project. On the Spring team at Pivotal, he led the site reliability engineering team and founded the popular Java metrics library, Micrometer. He's the author of O'Reilly's SRE with Java Microservices. And Jonathan, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I'm excited to do this. I hope you are.
I absolutely am. There's so many things we have to talk about. I'm not even sure where we're going to start, but we're going to make an attempt here.
Me neither. That's the fun. we're just going to dive in. And I always start the podcast by saying, are you ready to get human? And in this instance of the Humans of DevOps, I'm almost maybe we should get virtual. I don't know.
Virtual, that's right.
We should get, and it's so funny because, Jonathan, this is the first time we are speaking to each other. And, you know, we don't usually do a video component of this podcast, but we do for those listeners and breaking down the fourth wall. But we do have our videos on. I am talking to you and I can see you. And this is my first time seeing you in real life.
That's right. And your avatar first.
Yeah, you met my avatar first. I met your avatar first in the virtual world. And my goodness, it's jarring. It's so different. I feel like I know your cartoon version. It's right. So much better. So welcome to the podcast. Are you ready to get human-ish?
Let's get human.
So, Jonathan, first, I guess the biggest question is why, right? Why virtual reality? Why did you choose virtual reality for your team?
It's a social art, really, is what it is. It's definitely a form of art, but it's definitely a social one as well. Multiple people, like you mentioned earlier, work together on the same project. It evolves with multiple people working on it. It has to be maintained by multiple people working on it. And so just anytime there's going to be a new opportunity to engage in a different way, I think we have to give it a shot. And I was pretty skeptical when I first, encountered the, I watched Zuckerberg's announcement of the name change to Meta and the 3-minute presentation he gave where he jumped into a room, and I thought, no way, right? It didn't make any sense to me. But I think you need somebody that you trust to kind of say, give this a shot. And for me, I was listening to another podcaster, Tetri, and they were talking about VR, and they were talking more about the business where, you know, we feel like virtual reality is actually going to start in the enterprise, you know, with companies shipping out these devices and then move more to consumer. And I thought, well, if this is going to be one of these, you know, changes that happens in the way we work, where, you know, you could be the first company adopting a PC, then, well, we need to be one of those companies. So we need to give it a shot. And that's where we just made this low cost investment in them.
Yeah, it's extremely forward thinking. But like you said, it's low cost investment to at least try. So I think that was, that's very forward thinking of you to do it. And, because it's one of those things now that having observed it and lived in it, in the virtual reality, and participated, it is one of those things that for me, I didn't get it until I put on the headset.
Yeah.
I really didn't understand it.
It's hard to.
It's very hard. But once I popped into the, we met and we sat in a it looked like an office in a conference room. You pop in, I popped into a team meeting that you had, and I got to meet your coworkers, and we were sitting at a conference table, looking at a whiteboard, or actually there was also the circle. We could meet in a circle. You could change the room layout, but it felt like I was very present. You were all present, and we were actually in the same space, sharing a space together, which I guess for me is my biggest takeaway is I haven't really had that experience in a very long time. I haven't met in person with people in quite a bit. And that's something that you just can't get from a Zoom meeting.
And you do really feel like somebody is present next to you. There's spatial audio. So if they're to your right, they sound like they're to your right. If they're behind you, they sound like they're behind you. It's differential and in volume. It's you see gestures from their facial expressions and their body movements and hand gestures. It's very realistic in that fashion, all while looking cartoonish at the same
right. time. Right. Yeah, it looked cartoonish, but someone had pointed out, one of your team members had pointed out that even though it was cartoonish, it felt more real than Zoom. And I do tend to agree with that now, is that even though, like, for example, we're having this conversation and I'm looking at you and we're over Zoom, again, breaking down that fourth wall, but I think it's important in this conversation, I actually felt like we were closer in space, and it was a different conversation in a virtual world where I felt like, you know, you could get up and you could walk to the whiteboard and all the focus was on you and everyone was paying attention to what you had to say, and you could lead a conversation and you could draw up on the whiteboard and everyone's present. And I think the being present piece, again, at least to me, was so different. Is that the impact that you've seen on, like, your team meetings, for example? How has it impacted those?
I do. I remember one of the first, you know, group meetings of more than two people, I suppose, that we had in there. And you can have a visual of your screen, your laptop screen in front of you. You can have a keyboard in front of you, and you could absolutely be typing away on that, you know, on your computer and doing other work. And I think we do that on Zoom all the time, right? Because I can have my video on, but I'm not really watching it. I could be doing some background work and still appear the same way. But it just really occurred to me that there in that room, if I'm typing on my keyboard and my colleague to my left is talking, they can see me typing on my keyboard and looking at my screen instead of looking at them. So it actually kind of forces you in many ways. Just the social norm would be, that you look at the person that's speaking to you, and you can't fake it like you can in this 2D world. You actually have to turn and face them and give them your full attention.
Yeah, for the audience, that's fascinating. Yeah, I think that is a big piece. Is we don't have eye contact in Zoom, right? Unless you're one-on-one, and even if there's eye contact, you don't really have eye contact because it depends on where the camera is, depends on where you are, you're looking at yourself too. There's so many things that get in the way. But in the virtual world, you actually do, it does feel like you're making eye contact with people. You could shake your head, you could give hand gestures, thumbs up, thumbs down, air quotes, all the things that, yeah, I almost want to go back in now and test it with you guys. Can we give a fist bump? I think, or a high five? I don't know, shake hands. Yeah, seems like it. And that is a missing piece of conversation, is the eye contact.
That's right. Yeah. So the gestures are accurate enough that you really can tell what people intend through body gestures. And the very first time I was in the room and somebody else joined from the outside, they joined and just for the audience to understand, somebody else can join without a VR headset. And to the people in the room, it appears like they're just on a television screen inside the room.
Like a Zoom meeting.
A grid of people, just like a Zoom mm-hmm. in the room, and everybody else is, you know, physically in the room. So that's how that works. And so that was my first interaction with somebody in VR. I was actually in the VR room, and the team member joining me was actually through this like Zoom-like interface. And of course, audio wasn't working. I mean, we're all used to joining Zoom and our audio doesn't work or our mic doesn't work or whatever. And so I could hear him, but he couldn't hear me. And so he's saying, "Can you hear me?" And so I had no way of communicating with him because he couldn't hear me. So I just started nodding my head, yes. And I didn't even think about it. It was my natural, that's what I would do. You know, and he said, "Oh, this is a weird moment where I can see your cartoonish avatar nodding information at me, but I can't hear what you're saying."
How surreal is it? Yeah, you could give him a thumbs up too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So how has it, like, is it improved because of the difference of how communication is happening? Is that what's making it more productive for your team? What's the direct tie to the improvement, do you think?
I think we just to relay one event from last week, there was a problem that was confronting us, you know, kind of a mini production outage. And I joined one of my colleagues, also named John, in the room, and we just were working on this problem. And so I had projected my screen on the whiteboard, it's kind of like a massive screen is basically what you see in the whiteboard. And John's sitting next to me looking at his computer screen. He can see my screen on the whiteboard. So it's kind of like we're sitting side by side and we're working on this problem, which is already cool and already a unique feeling. But another team member of ours, Kevin, just popped into the room thinking, "Oh, maybe I could help." And quickly he finds that, you know, we're really engrossed in the problem. He doesn't really understand the detail of it necessarily. And so he just started working on whatever he was working on, but he's remained in the room, and we could see him just typing away over there, kind of minding his own business. But interestingly, like whenever you're present with someone, you gain somewhat through osmosis, like some knowledge about what's happening, even if you're not like fully paying attention. I've never had that experience. I think on a Zoom, you know, you could be screen sharing, but you know, I can't be also working on something and watching the screen share at the same time. And here, that's just kind of the default behavior.
It's almost like walking into a conference room in the office and just plopping yourself down, right? And maybe there's another meeting going on. If it's an open door, you know, to the conference room, sometimes that happens. You walk in, you sit down. And in a way, it kind of... we didn't talk about this, but maybe it's almost like a silo breaker in some respects, because someone could be having that your teammate could have been having a conversation. Maybe Kevin could have said, "You know what, actually, you know, this didn't happen because of X," and throw in, you know, a solution that it would have taken like 2 weeks probably to get to over just Zoom, for example. You would have to plan a meeting, meet about it.
There's a dynamic, and I think it's a similar. I spent many years in the Army, and very early on when I was training with this group, the officer that was leading this training, he liked running a lot. So we'd do a run every morning, a long run. And you could self-select into an A group, a B group, or a C group. And, you know, it's just depending on your speed. And so people are really competitive or really strong are going to be an A. Obviously people are not are going to be a C. And, you know, I hadn't done a lot of like played sports much before that. So I like fell right into the B, very competitive person, but not clearly not an A group yet. And I like really wanted to be, you know, in this A group. And I remember him saying like, you know, if you want to be an A group, start every day in A group. And we're all running the same route. So when just go with them as long as you possibly can. And when you can't take it anymore, you just fall back to B and run with B the remainder of the time, right? But then every day strive to go a little bit further and a little bit further and a little bit, and one day you're going to get to the halfway mark, and then one day you're going to get to the three-quarter mark. Actually, I feel like there's a similar dynamic in software. There's so many skills to learn and so much about how we think and how we reason about problems and how we hypothesize, make and test hypotheses very quickly, that I think a more junior member of the team actually, like just being present helps them feel like they can kind of like run with A group for a little while. And then they could absolutely just like start typing something else, right? Kind of fall back to B. And that's, I think there's that dynamic as well.
Do you find that some people who might be less vocal on Zoom suddenly become more vocal in the VR room?
What I've noticed is, you know, is they don't.
And oh, okay.
I've even noticed, you know, that somebody that's very quiet on Zoom also winds up being very quiet in the room. So it's, yeah, in many ways reflective of their personalities.
Yeah. What's interesting about the VR space is, you know, with Zoom, we're opening up our world. You can have a fake background. I use a fake background, and that's, you know, it looks fake, and you know, you see yourself and it's not perfect, and we don't all have green screens. But it's 2D in the virtual world, which is obviously 3D. It feels more realistic, even though we're looking at cartoons, but we're also not letting ourselves, we don't have to look at ourselves the whole time. You know, in Zoom, you feel the Zoom fatigue, right? That doesn't exist in the VR world, I noticed. It doesn't feel like that anyway. I'm so engaged in what everybody else is talking about, and I'm so engaged in the conversation and being present that it doesn't feel like I'm experiencing that. Do you find that your meetings are shorter, longer? You know, do you tend to just get carried away being in there?
I think one useful feature right now is the battery life is not amazing. You can get about an hour and a half maybe on and it is wireless. So in many ways that's good because it kind of limits, you can charge it very quickly and be back in again. But we tend to use it in a very ad hoc fashion. Just, you know, we'll pop in there, we'll pop out, and just, you know, and it's almost like, I know there's been a debate that's raged for forever and probably always will about whether cubicles or offices or open floor plan is a better arrangement. And the arguments are obvious, you know, open floor plan, more collaboration, office cubicle, more quiet time, privacy sort of thing. I feel like in many ways here, we kind of get the best of both worlds. It's when you want the open floor plan, you pop into the room. When you want the private space, you just simply take off the headset and you're in as private as a space as you want to be.
And yeah.
For me, I'm very social, so I have always done this. I have a 13-inch MacBook, not a 16-inch MacBook, because I move all the time. I'll pick up the laptop and I'll go to a coffee shop and then a library and then another coffee shop. And then you just like to be surrounded. But I know not everybody is that way. You really get to choose your alternative reality outside of the virtual reality, whatever it may be.
Do you have office hours, like standing office hours in the VR environment?
I think that would be wise, and we haven't formalized that yet, but I know that, you know, we have had some, you know, early experience where somebody like popped in and nobody was there, and so, you know, when do you know to join? And so I think that would be really helpful.
Today's episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast is sponsored by Collide. Collide is an endpoint security solution that sends your employees important and timely security recommendations for their Linux, Mac, and Windows devices right inside Slack. Collide is perfect for organizations that care deeply about compliance and security, but don't want to get there by locking down devices to the point where they become unusable. Instead of frustrating your employees, Collide educates them about security and device management while directing them to fix important problems. You can try Collide with all its features on an unlimited number of devices free for 14 days. No credit card required. Visit collide.com/HODP to sign up today. That's Collide, KOLIDE.com/HODP. Enter your email when prompted to receive your free Collide gift bundle after trial activation. Yeah, we were throwing around some ideas of uses of the VR room, because I feel like there's so many. And you know, when I was giving my intro here, you must have a ton that you've, you know, through your experience. How long have you guys been using it?
I'll explain also how we rolled it out. And yeah. So I bought the first headset in November, and again, very skeptical. I'm not a gamer. I haven't done a lot of these things. I wouldn't actually be inclined to it. But I bought one, and it was sent to my, and I put it on because I had heard, like, well, there's some rough edges to this. And how rough are these rough edges? Like, mm-hmm. How well can I see the text on my screen? Does it make you dizzy? You know, these sort of things. So just bought one. They're about $300. So it's $300 investment. The first person to join me in the room actually joined remotely through the Zoom-like interface. So that was our first test of that level of communication. Then I bought two more. And so didn't roll it immediately out to the whole team, bought two more. That group, that first three people, like, figured out some of the mechanics of this. How do you fine tune the display? How do you get the software working? Do we get extra peripherals? You know, these sort of things. And, you know, then we rolled it out to the next group. So just did it incrementally. So November is when we started that process. And I would say about, you know, Christmas is when we started shipping them out to the whole team.
Okay. So it's very new. And how do the employees feel? Do you feel like, because I think we're in the middle of, everyone knows this, you know, this is such a strange time when you can have employees from anywhere right. in the world. You could find any job, it doesn't matter where you live anymore. You can work, you know, in Shanghai and be in New York and vice versa. Do you think this gives you somewhat of a competitive edge? Do employees really like this? Is it a perk?
I think it's exactly as you'd expect. There's like a mixture of feelings about it. And you want to be sensitive to that. There's some people that are going to be like, oh, I want to try this right away. Like, you know, and some that, like, you know, it's going to take a while to, you know, like, suspend this belief. I think usually when somebody just for a moment suspends this belief and comes in, that tends to be a moment where they're like, oh, I see where this is, you know, it's just a very different experience than you would expect.
Suspending belief is, so I want to go in with an open mind. I had no idea what to expect. My only prior dabble in virtual reality, I was telling you, was Virtual Boy when that came out, whenever in the 90s by Nintendo, and it was very not virtual, and it was just an eyesore and made you sick after like 10 minutes of putting it on. So that was my only experience with virtual reality. This is not Virtual Boy. This is legit virtual reality. And I guess the definition, right, of virtual, I was looking this up, of virtual reality is truly the is the departure, your brain's departure from reality and being in what it perceives as another place. Right. And after putting on that headset, it is real. You feel presence. You feel like you are there. I had to be really careful because I'm in a small office and I have stuff all over the place, and it's very easy to walk into the wall or knock something. Like, they have safety measures. You got to set your boundary and all these other, and there's pass through so you can actually see your desk or see the wall that you're about to hit. Sometimes it doesn't work. I got to say, I did knock over a few things while getting up to the lectern or whatever, but I think having that open mindset, you're 100% right. I for one, after coming in and doing it for the first time, can't see how you wouldn't at least be like, this is different. This feels different.
it's different. And I think, you know, like resolution could be a little bit better. Latency could be a little bit better. These are the typical, like, this very much is first generation PC, but it's like viable at this point. I feel like enough that we do spend a certain number of hours every week in it by choice. And I can imagine the next, you know, generation really being the one that's really hard to resist at that point. So I think that's the state of it. I think the next generation is coming out April or something like that. So just right around the corner. And I expect that's going to it's definitely going this way.
Yeah, immediately when we're in there, we're like, oh, I wonder if we could have side conversations. It'd be great if there could be breakout rooms. It'd be great if there could... there's the door that doesn't move. We were joking. I was like, I wish I could George Costanza out of the room, you know, like wave to everybody and then peace. I think for events, there's a whole world that is, and I don't know, I know you can watch concerts in it. I was looking at some of the other things that you could do with it, but that's not really the event I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of networking events, like actually going into the room and tapping someone on the shoulder and interrupting a conversation, things we just don't have in virtual reality, or I'm sorry, in reality with Zoom.
Yeah, if you know, the next Java user group I think present from this actually and just open the invite to anybody with a headset to just join, and then everybody else can join via the Zoom sort of thing. So it's like, I think it could be an interesting way of presenting and be more connected to your audience. We were talking about something which, you know, earlier, which I had an experience years ago where a colleague of mine, Deshaun Carter, you know, who lived in Kansas City, just put a number of, you know, engineer sort of acquaintances of his on a bus and drove them across the state of Missouri. It was about a 6-hour drive to St. Louis to just go to a meetup group. And it was like a weird elementary school field trip almost, where, like, you know, we stop at a gas station halfway and said, you got 10 minutes to go to the restroom and get, you know, food and stuff like that. You got to be back on the bus. And there was this, like, the cultivation of the conversations and relationships that occurred just on that, like, 6-hour bus trip across the state and back actually lasted for months or years beyond that. And I think there's a similar opportunity here where, you know, we've actually had customer engineers join us in our room, in our workspace, no matter where they are, and just be present with us. We maybe solving a problem with them. Sometimes they come back, and, you know, it's exciting enough for us to have one customer engineer in there with us. What I'm really excited about is when 2 or 3 or 5 from different companies are there, because then they're sharing ideas with each other as well. That's just, I just want to be fly on the wall as they share their challenges and problems with one another as well.
Yeah, you could have focus groups in there. You could have, like, we were talking, like, product onboarding meetings. I actually saw it for an issue that a lot of companies have right now is employee onboarding because of a virtual workforce.
You can feel isolated.
It gives you an environment to go to.
That's right.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating. You know, what would you say are the biggest benefits of VR other than what we've been discussing?
I wonder if others feel the same way, but I just know that I miss the experience of being able to sit next to someone, not necessarily pair programming with one keyboard and one monitor, but just being able to glance over at the monitor next to me and be engaged really in solving a problem together. That's actually what I was hoping to find in this room, which was that if we were all in a line, that I would be able to see the monitor of the person next to me. And they are thinking privacy here, so you actually can. It's just like a ghost sort of transparent view. But any one person can present their monitor to the front. And that really does give you that experience of being able to glance over. And that's for developers, I think that's really key to be able to do that.
Yeah, and we're talking to a mixture of dev people, ops people, DevOps people, you know. So, what would you say to them, you know, as far as like what VR can do for them with regards to the code quality and productivity, just in general?
Well, it's interesting. I'd say, like, so Modern, you know, just as a little bit of background, we are actually a developer tools company, so we do automated source code repair. You mentioned this thing about refactoring from Netflix, and it's exactly it. We write recipes that automatically go and modernize your code or patch security vulnerabilities or these sorts of things. It seems like a pretty magical technology, but it started with actually, I was working for an engineering tools team, an operations team at Netflix. And to be effective, the most effective you can be as part of a central team, you need to be like an ally or alongside of the developer, which is really your customer in many ways in that environment. And so how can you be closer to them? How can you join them where they are? How can you be, you know, participatory? Netflix was a very difficult culture and a really, really eye-opening one to be part of a central operations team, because they had this freedom and responsibility culture, which basically meant, you know, a central team could impose no constraints on what product engineers did. Now imagine being a security engineer there and saying, like, I know of a particular vulnerability. The easiest way to like, the first thing we all think is, I'm going to break the build pipeline if you know, don't pass a certain gate, right? Or I'm going to, you know, I'm going to put gates up. And here they were talking about building guardrails instead of gates. You know, how do we build an experience that keeps the developer going down this pay path? And a lot of it's just being present with them, communicating with them. For this particular problem that our company now works on, which again is around application modernization or security vulnerability patching, we would be trying to push through some initiative. And I would try to generate reports and dashboards and views for the developers to understand the current state and communicate what our intended state was. And I didn't find it to be very actionable. Like people just wouldn't move forward. And I'd go and meet with them and say, what can we do to help you come along with us on this initiative? And they said, well, if you do it for me, I'm happy to do it. You know, and this is where automation comes from. But like, doing it for them means, you know, both providing the tooling and also being present with them in their environment to help them along.
Yeah, I think that being present in there, right? That's what we talked about with VR. So I'm going to ask you a question that I saw come up. It made me think about VR because I just experienced it. It's, do you think this is a fad? Is VR a fad or is VR the future?
I think if you rewind to middle of last year, I would have said VR was the fad, but augmented reality was the future. I really thought that's how it would go, that I could totally imagine like discarding my physical monitor and instead, you know, developing a more dynamic sort of fungible like AR experience. I think now I believe it's the opposite, and I'm surprised to hear myself say that, but I think AR is less useful when we're confronted with the possibility that we have with VR. I do think VR is going to ultimately win. And I think one of the really interesting how I see this going really is that it's going to start in the business. I mean, here I am as a small business, you know, leader shipping out devices at, you know, $300 a pop to our team. It's just like the PC. It started in the business and then it developed consumer applications later. I see the same thing happening here with VR.
Yeah. And to be, and let's just, again, like you're not this huge company, but you're a small company and you're willing to take the investment because you see the benefits, which is interesting because, it didn't come out and cost millions of dollars to implement.
Yeah.
And there's no cost once you're in the app at the moment right now. It's not even an app in the metaverse or whatever. It's all free.
Yeah. I think like a lot of organizations, we've never tried to overly optimize for cost of equipment because it's just it's part of, you know, your daily work. So a marginal improvement in daily equipment or the equipment you use daily makes a big difference in bottom line productivity. So I think we see the same thing here.
So now we're on our way to wrapping up, and you know, Jonathan, this has been an experience for me. I hope it translated to our listeners. I believe you had recorded a piece of ourselves in the VR world that we'd love to share with everybody, so you can get a sense of what it looks like. obviously it's not going to necessarily do it complete justice. Obviously being there is, you know, sells it, but I think it would give you a good idea of what we were seeing, correct?
That's right. So you can see the team members to the right. I look over at you and our producer here, Jada. You can see her on the TV screen joining us remotely.
Yeah, we'll introduce Jada. No one has met Jada unless you knew her before all this. So Jada is our producer. So she'll make an appearance for the first time on a Humans of DevOps podcast. Yeah, rightfully right. So, by the way.
Yeah. So hopefully that's helpful to visualize it a bit.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much, Jonathan. This has been truly an experience. Just amazing. It's opened my eyes to a whole new world. I'm a little scared of where we're going. Matrix began.
Yes, it is.
So we like to get personal before we go. And I always like to ask one question. I believe we're going to retire the old question that we used to ask on this podcast. So I'm going to ask you something different. So if you could be remembered for one thing, what would that be?
Wow, that's a
deep right?
question right there.
We always ask a very deep get to know you question.
I mean, I think it's, I remember going to a long answer maybe, but a seminar a while back on speaking and technical speaking. And the presenter, his name is Ann Ricketts, by the way. If you're in the Bay Area, she's absolutely fantastic and you should hire her. But, you know, Ann Ricketts Lighthouse Communications, I think is what her company is called. She said, like, don't try to be like Steve Jobs. Don't try to be like, you know, this is some other famous speaker. What is it like your one personality characteristic that you want to come through? And here I am, like, just like from the Midwest, like rural sort of upbringing. I think one characteristic of that area is just, you know, just like a friendliness and a, you know, willing to listen, you know, and be present with your neighbors. And so I feel like that's what I always want to bring through, and hopefully we made you feel welcome in our little area there today.
Yeah, thank you so much. I felt like I met your entire team. Like I was at your office. I got to know everybody. It's truly a unique experience, and you do have a sense of I feel like that we've met before, which is odd to say when I've met a cartoon version of you. Well, Jonathan Schneider, co-founder and CEO of Modern. This has been an absolute pleasure. So I really appreciate your coming on and introducing me to the virtual world.
Yeah. Thank you, Jason.
Yeah. And thank you for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. I'm going to end this episode the same way I always do, encouraging you to become a member of DevOps Institute to get access to even more great resources just like this one. Until next time, stay safe, stay healthy, and most of all, stay human. Live long and prosper.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. Don't forget to join our global community to get access to even more great resources like this. Until next time, remember, you are part of something bigger than yourself. You belong.